Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast, joining you on a Monday, and the Milwaukee Brewers, against all odds, in a historical losing record situation, are going to the Major League Baseball playoffs. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, and on the other line is Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter, of course, for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Read everything he has at jsonline.com. There is a lot to talk about because the Brewers are going to the playoffs, although it's hard to figure out how. They're 29-31. We're able to get in despite a losing weekend series with the St. Louis Cardinals because the San Francisco Giants and Philadelphia Phillies both lost their last three games, giving a window to the Brewers to get in as the number 8 seed. They go to Los Angeles to face the Dodgers starting Wednesday. Tom, the weekend has brought us just a number of weird stats and revelations about how this team, they didn't have a winning record at any point this year. They have won the season series against exactly one team this year. I mean, there's absolutely nothing statistically that says this is a playoff team, and yet here we are. They're going to the playoffs. So obviously that has a lot to do with the truncated season and the expanded playoffs and a lot of other things. But what is the thing that's blowing your mind the most about this? For me, it's the fact that they've never been above 500 at any point this season. I just can't imagine how that would be a playoff team, but that's the situation we're in.
Yeah. I mean, that is, if 500 is the definition of average in baseball, which everybody considers that to be average, then they're below average and they still made the playoffs. But so many other teams struggled more than they did. It's very interesting that four of the five NL Central teams advanced. I mean, the Pirates never had a chance. But of the 8-team field, four are from the NL Central. And one way to look at that is, boy, were the other divisions bad, except for the top teams. But the other way to look at it is, maybe they just beat each other up so much but not quite enough to eliminate everybody. So, I mean, it's kind of a source of pride that four of the NL Central teams made it, but just, I mean, you talked about how the Giants and the Phillies just couldn't win a game the last weekend. It's going to be long, hard winters for those organizations, I would think, because they're just going to say, how could we not win a game at the end to get in? But they couldn't.
That's especially true for the Phillies, who had a protracted slump at the end of the year, have a lot of talent on that team, and just did not win late in the season. The Giants, they were on the precipice of sweeping a doubleheader on Friday night that would have given them the win they needed. They won the first game, and in the second game, Trent Grisham, last year promising rookie season for the Brewers, ended up being a bit of a playoff goat with his famous error in the wild card game, hits a 3-run homer in the 9th inning, and the Padres win, and then Padres go on to win the next two games. I mean, your head just starts spinning when you add up all the things that had to go right for the Brewers, given that they were only going to win 29 games for them to get into the playoffs. It really is something. I look now, though, at what happened to them on Thursday in the loss to St. Louis. Corbin Burns getting injured and having to leave the game, and it sounds like he's going to be gone for a prolonged period of time. You can say in baseball anything can happen. They could go to L.A. and win that series. A best-of-three series is nothing. But without Corbin Burns, without that front-end starting pitcher to couple with Brandon Woodruff, it does seem like a bit of more of an uphill battle, knowing what this offense has been through. So I'm, as far as I know, Corbin Burns is definitely out for this series and even a next one if there is a next one. Is he done for the rest of the season, to your understanding? And then Brett Anderson, who left his game on Sunday, what are they saying about his injury? Is there any chance he's available to pitch?
Corbin Burns, I'm guessing, is going to be done for the season. Maybe if they made it to the World Series. Those oblique injuries are very tricky, and they're usually 4 to 6 week things, so that just eliminates Corbin Burns. It's so patently unfair for him to get hurt, both to him and the Brewers, because, I mean, this guy was a Cy Young Award candidate, and the only way the Brewers win games is by out-pitching teams. They went 3-5 on that last trip, and they won their three games, 3-2, 3-0, 3-0. So, I mean, the only way that they can beat you with in the current state of their offense is to out-pitch you. So it's just patently unfair to both him and the team that he got hurt like that. And Brett Anderson's certainly out for one series and maybe another with a, the last time he had that blister, they put him on the 10-day IL, you know, so that tells you know, about his availability for this series. We're gonna, you know, when they put out their roster for this series, those guys aren't going to be on it. So just how they try to piece together their pitching is going to be fascinating. You have Woodruff sitting there for game two, so they're okay there. And this guy, you know, and I know JR, you put out your, you know, best moments of the season. What he did Saturday night under the circumstances,
Massive.
you know, Craig Council called it one of the greatest games, regular season games for the Brewers ever, or since CC Sabathia. And it certainly qualifies as that. You know, when just in the in recent times, when you want to talk about regular season pitching, you look at that Sabathia game, you look at that Woodruff game, and I'd put Chacin's game in game 163.
Absolutely.
You know, that was a regular season game also. That was not a playoff game. That was a regular season game. And he pitched, you know, it wasn't as deep. You know, I think he only went 5 innings, 6 innings, but still under the circumstances at Wrigley Field. You know, he did everything they asked of from the day. But Woodruff Saturday night, that was remarkable. He retired 19 straight guys at one time. Yeah, I'm guessing it's going to be Brent Suter and the bullpen gang in game one. David Stearns said something pretty telling and funny yesterday after the Brewers got in. He goes, "We're not afraid to be unconventional with our pitching," as if they have any choice. And the Dodgers know better than any team how
Yeah.
unconventional they can be. Go back to the 2018 NLCS. You know, they were using openers. They weren't revealing their starter until just before game time. Woodruff was involved in that. I mean, they were very unconventional for six games and then on into game seven, you know. So that's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to piece it. I mean, maybe they don't even know what they'll do in game three right now. It's just, when you assume that's, you know, they're playing three straight games without a day off, so you know it's not like those day offs were critical to the Brewers in the 2018 LCS because it allowed them to do some really interesting and unconventional stuff. But they don't have that this time. If they, you know, you worry about game three if you get there, and then it's just all hands on deck.
Right.
But that game would probably be some combination of Hauser and Lindblom and who knows who else. But you worry about that. You don't worry about game three. You worry about game one first. You know, people were all uptight that they used Devin Williams and Josh Hader in that first game of that doubleheader night with a 3-run lead, as if you can, as if you can treat a 3-run lead like a 10-run lead. You know, and Hader had to battle his butt off to protect that lead. But you don't worry, you don't save guys in win or go home games, you know. So it's going to be interesting because unless the offense just suddenly wakes up and against Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw, I wouldn't put a lot of money on that, you know. Right now, I'm not sure the Brewers offense could score against Ferris Buehler, much less Walker Buehler.
Yeah, it's been an ugly offensive spectacle this year. But to go back to, you know, even the pitching, even in the wild card game last year, that was unconventional. Brandon Woodruff was coming off an injury. They didn't know for how long they had him, got four great
Right.
innings out of him, and then
Right.
they went bullpen. Suter,
Yeah.
Pomeranz, Hader. Everything worked out up until the very end.
Just that, you
So
know, people still say, well, why did they keep Pomeranz? And why they had it just the way they wanted it. You
yep.
know, they were gonna go Hader last six outs if they had a lead, and they had a lead. It just didn't work out. You
Right.
know, sometimes a good plan doesn't work, you know. That doesn't mean it was a bad plan, you know. And they'll put together their best plan for game one Wednesday night. You know, and then if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. You got to score some runs. You know, if you don't score, you're not winning. You know, yesterday they had one run until the ninth inning. That wasn't enough. You know, and you got to score some runs. You got to at least score three. That's how the three games they won on that trip, they scored three runs in each game.
8 games in a row now that the Brewers have scored 3 runs or less, and that is one of the longer streaks in club history, actually. So they're not exactly heading in there with a head of steam. I wanted to touch one more for a little bit longer on Brandon Woodruff. I think maybe we've undersold how good he has been this year. He's taken a couple losses. He's hit a wall maybe in the fifth or sixth inning after just cruising, but he's also just had some unbelievable performances. I mean, you know,
Yes.
multi double-digit strikeout performances. He was a big part of a
Yes.
one-hitter early in the season, and this, like you said, this performance Saturday, as
Yes.
big game as it gets. You know, we'll have to figure out how to evaluate everybody for good and for bad, but I feel more comfortable saying I think Brandon Woodruff took a star turn here in 2020 more than I really feel comfortable evaluating anybody else on this team.
He had some one batter or one inning hiccups in some of his starts that made them not look as good as he pitched overall in those games. You know, he kept getting stuck, you know, in one inning or one batter. In that one game against Cincinnati, he gave up the 2-run homer to Suarez. That it was a one batter hiccup, but he had some other games where he just got stuck inside of one inning, and not always bad pitching. Sometimes soft contact stuff, and you know. But he did not get stuck. You know, he actually was a little shaky at the start Saturday, not in the middle, but in the start. And he battled through that, and then 19, and I mean, it was lights out in the middle of that game, 19 in a row. And I mean, he gave them just exactly what they needed. That was and they're facing Wainwright, you know, and you knew you weren't going to get a lot off of him. They had a couple of back-to-back homers and then scratched out another run. But just under the circumstances, an epic performance.
Yeah, you feel pretty good about Woodruff going in game two. If maybe they could steal game one or sneak away with game three, they could do this. And like we said, we know that in baseball, the worst team in the league is capable of beating the best team in the league 2 out of 3. That's just the way that math works in this game, which is one of the reasons why I think the format can be judged as a little bit unfair, or just trying to judge, you know, just having a playoffs after 60 games is you know, the circumstances, but also a little bit unjust. For really sort of divining who the best teams are in baseball, and having fewer teams in the postseason would certainly speak to that. What is the sense you get about this team's excitement level, enthusiasm level? I mean, I'm sure they're excited to be in the playoffs, but this is so profoundly weird to be the eighth team in, to be, you know, have a losing record. I mean, are they, you know, do they feel like this is a new life, breath of fresh air? Are they just going to try to like grit and claw and scratch their way through what comes next? I mean, how do you sort of interpret what they were saying after the game, their enthusiasm about all of this?
Well, I think they do have enthusiasm. You know, they know that they got in with help and that they struggled to get in. But you have to be enthusiastic. This was a year where getting in a struggling fashion is way better than not getting in. Well, I just said that the Phillies and the Giants, they're going to have an agonizing offseason. And here's why. To go through all those COVID protocols and live such a differently bizarre life, day in and day out, on and off the field.
Right.
To go through all that and not get in into an expanded field, too. I mean, more than half the teams were allowed in this year. That would be hard to take, JR. That would, I mean, I'm sure the teams that didn't get in are struggling with the fact that we did all of that and then didn't get in. It just makes you feel worse, you know? But to go through all that and get in, even struggling to get in, like Craig Counsell said, we're not going to apologize for getting in the losing record. Forget the apology. We're not sending a I'm sorry card to the other teams, you know? And so it was funny talking to him about that, watching that Giants Padres game. You know, how fitting is it to get in watching a game on TV? Because it's the only way anybody was allowed to watch this year.
That's true.
You know, fans had to watch it too. But it was so funny talking to them about that final strike, which was so obviously not a strike, but such a good COVID strike zone way to end that season, because the COVID strike zone has been like the zip code of Manhattan, the area code of Manhattan. I mean, the umpires were, you know, they will never admit it, JR, but the umpires were obviously told to call strikes this year, because what were the one thing that they were so worried about? Staying out there too long. You know, they put the runner on second in extra innings. I'm surprised in the 11th inning they didn't just put three runners on. They were so worried about the longer you stay out there, the more exposed you are to COVID. I'm not sure how sound that thinking was, but we watched it for 60 games, and the strike zone was way bigger than it's ever been. And a lot of hitters just said, "What in the heck is going on out here?" No pitchers complained. But that last pitch from Rosenthal, I think the guy's name was Slater. Good goodness. I mean, what was it, a cricket match or a baseball game? I mean, you know, that even Yadier or Molina would have blushed over framing that pitch. But, you know, what can you do? I mean, once it's the last, you never get away with arguing a ball strike call that ends a game, because the umpires just get off the field, you know? And so, but it was funny talking to the Brewers, because we asked every one of them, "What'd you think of that last pitch?" "Oh, yeah, definitely a strike right down the middle."
Yeah, with a smile and a wink. I mean, they've had their share of it too. They know what the strike zone is like. They've seen this happen time and again. And you know, I don't think anybody thinks the Giants would have made the playoffs in a full season. They were still a little bit of a rebuilding phase, you know. And let's say that ball is called a ball, that they're still, you know, they still got two outs and nobody on. But
Right.
you know, they also had to face the Dodgers and the Padres a bunch this year, including in the end of the season. The
Right.
Brewers didn't have to face teams of that caliber. I mean, you're talking about how you evaluate the Central with four teams in. You know, I think it's safe to say those four teams aren't better than the two teams atop the NL West. I mean, you could also say, you know, the Brewers didn't have two teams like the Diamondbacks and the Rockies to play. I mean, you can evaluate this any number of ways.
The best teams the Brewers played all year were the Indians, the Twins, and the White Sox.
Absolutely.
You know, the Cubs showed you what one hot stretch can do for you in COVID ball. They went 13-3 to start the season, and it was actually the Brewers who finally cooled them off. The Brewers beat them three straight times in a four-game series after losing the opener. That they're the team that finally cooled them off, and it was the longest winning streak the Brewers had all year until that four-gamer toward the end. But after that 13-3 start, the Cubs played losing baseball. They had a below 500 record. But they still got in the playoffs because nobody could catch them, and that hot streak, you know, was proved to be enough. Nobody else could get hot. The Reds finally got hot at the end. I'm guessing the Braves are very nervous about facing the Reds in a best of three, because if you can line up Bauer, Gray, and Castillo, goodness. And the Braves pitching actually, you know, got beat up. They have a good offense. But that's why the Brewers, if they could have had Burns and Woodruff in games one and two, would have made the Dodgers nervous, you know? Because if you have two, but certainly three, like the Reds have, pitchers to line up in that first series, man, you can steal a lower seed can steal away a game, you
Yeah,
know?
well, I mean, I even think about the Phillies with Nola and Zach Wheeler. I mean, those are two really good pitchers. All they had to do was get in. They've got Elfin for the third game if they need him, and they've, you know, this is the free agent year for their catcher, Real Muto, and you know, this is, oh, I can't believe they couldn't win one game against the Rays. But again, that's a lot of teams just flailing at the end. The Brewers just flailed, I guess, the
I get
least.
and I give those teams credit that had clinched for still. I mean, the Padres put Trevor Rosenthal in at the end
They
yesterday.
did. And they had nothing to play for even at early in that series. They were locked in as the four seed. There was really not much they had to do there.
Just competitive baseball. So I give all those teams credit for doing that. You know, it'd been real easy to roll over, and they didn't do it. You know, the Tampa Bay shut out the Phillies, you know, in the final game. I mean, they kept pitching, kept playing, you know. I give these teams credit. So, man, you gotta admire what Oakland and Tampa Bay continue to do, even in COVID ball, with low payrolls and small markets, all this stuff, and they just continue to be good, you know. And you got to give those teams credit. So, and so I'm writing a story today summarizing what the Brewers did or didn't do. And I bottom line them feeling good about backing in, whatever you want to call it, for two reasons. Two things made them feel good about it, and rightfully so. One, COVID ball, just getting through COVID ball. It's just, you know, in one piece, they had a little they had a little blip of positive tests in Appleton, but none in Milwaukee, and that was huge. And then the other thing is, they can finally say in their 50th anniversary season, they made the playoffs 3 straight years.
It's
You
true.
know, I mean, they had only done it twice, two times in a row, two different times, 81 and 82, and then the last 18 and 19. So, I mean, this is not a franchise with an abundance of playoff, you know, appearances, you know, and the golden years have really been, you know, really the Ryan Braun years, 08, 11, 18, 19, and now 20, you know. So if this is his last year, you know, at least he can say they got in the playoffs one more time, no matter how they did it. And so that's why they felt, you know, you ask, could they feel good? They could feel good for those two reasons. Do they feel good about the way they were playing? No, I don't think so. But it was good enough this year.
Yeah, and Ryan Braun, it feels more and more obvious now that this is his last, you know, his last time in a Brewers uniform. You know, the Brewers posting sort of a farewell clip video type thing. Ryan Braun, when he speaks about it, definitely gives the impression that he expects to either be out of baseball or somewhere else next year. Is there any hope that that's not the case, that they could bring him back on a small deal next year, or is that ship slowly but surely leaving the port?
Well, I think it's less likely than it is more likely, but I'm not going to say not completely undoable. You know, there's a lot of moving parts there, and let's see. They all have to merge for it to happen, and let's see if it does. And a lot of it has to do with him, a lot of it has to do with them, and then also the world itself. You know, so these are different times. So let's see how it all merges. I do think it's less likely than more likely, and that's where I'll leave it for now.
Yeah. Going back to, you mentioned the Rays and the A's, and I think Brewers fans might be a little jealous seeing those smallish markets or markets that aren't expected to compete on a regular basis, nevertheless compete on a regular basis, doing it in unconventional ways, the ways that I think the Brewers have as well. And maybe jealous is too strong because, you know, neither one of those teams has won a championship either. So really they're kind of on par with what the Brewers are doing. But as far as this team, and you said you're writing about this, the moves that David Stearns made, he spoke to reporters yesterday and admitted it, which he's done before when something has gone wrong, like the Jonathan Schoop move in 2018. He came out and said it. Yeah, that didn't go like I thought it would. And this whole offseason probably has not come together like he thought it would. You really look at the moves he made, and probably Jed Jerko, Brett Anderson probably as well, the only moves that really you could say made this team better. And some of that is because guys just woefully underperformed. In fact, most of it is that. I think we would have expected much better years from guys like Avisaíl García, Omar Narváez. What is the move you think that really that he could have done differently? That maybe even in the moment you thought, I could tell you what mine is. I thought in the moment they should have signed Yasmani Grandal for the money that he got from the White Sox if that was available to them, rather than try something a little bit different approach with the catching position. And especially knowing now what the strike zone is like. I mean, imagine Yasmani's framing powers with the, you know, leeway he'd be given now. But I don't know if that strikes you necessarily. Is there one move in particular that you think he really regrets, or you think really could have been done a little bit differently, or is it just you just got to look at it in total as sort of a big picture sort of thing?
Well, I'll answer that by saying this. There was one thing I admired Stern saying, you say, and one thing I admired that he didn't say. I admired that he said, "Hey, my moves didn't work." He didn't say the dog ate my homework, you know,
True.
or that COVID ball just screwed up everything. And he could have said that and gotten away with it, but instead he said, "My moves didn't work." So tremendous honesty there, and owning up to it. But the one thing that he didn't say that I admired also is he didn't say, "Hey guys, I wasn't given near the payroll I had the year before."
Right.
So you know, you wanted me to keep Mike Moustakas or Yasmani Grandel. Show me how I could work that into the payroll I was given. And they and you know, he says they don't give him a payroll, but whether it was given or not given or implied or not implied, before COVID, you know, prorated everybody's payroll, they were going to start with about a $90 million payroll compared to $125 the year before. They had a 25% reduction for whatever reasons you want to say. And, you know, I had sources and I wrote it that said they did finish in the red the year before, because 125 is high for that market. He had less money to work with, and he tried a bunch of bargain basement piece together, you know, platoon type things with veterans. And I don't know if it would have worked out better over a 162 game season. They certainly pulled the plug, admittedly, on Brock Holt earlier than you would have in a 162 game season.
Justin Smoke too. Yep.
Yeah. But for whatever reasons, they just didn't work, you know. I mean, how do you explain Omar Narváez looking like he's never hit a baseball before? You know, the guy hit 22 home runs last year, and this year he can't hit a ball hard. And how do you explain Avisel Garcia's power disappearing? You know, he's average. He's not a bopper, but he's an 18 to 19 homer guy that this year hit two. Again, we're talking 60 games, but multiply times three, and it's still six homers, you know, over 162 games. So how do you explain? And then, you know, there's four other people that contributed to the downturn too. Hira and Yelich were their best returning offensive players, and they did not perform nearly to how they did in the past. Lorenzo Cain opted out after a week, and I think it's safe to say they never figured out the leadoff spot in the lineup after that. And then Braun was hurt much of the year until September, and then he got hot. He got healthy and got hot. He cooled off that last week too. But you add all that together, and it's easy to see why they've struggled to score runs. They're, you know, we just gave about seven reasons why they've struggled to score runs. You know, it's as I wrote about their broken offense in my Sunday column. No player had a good season, you know. No player had a good season. Jerko did okay, and some other guys did okay, but no player had a good season, you know. I'm an MVP voter this year, and there's 10 names in the ballot, and there will be no Brewer names in my 10 person list, you know. No player had a good season, and they've got to figure out why before next year.
Yeah, and you know, it bears some mention too that as bad as it seems that the Brewers have been, they actually, if this were a normal season, we'd be at the end of May, or actually probably into June at this point. They would be two games out of that second wild card spot, which is not a death sentence early, you know, not even to the midway point of the season. I mean, they would obviously need to retool pretty dramatically. There might be more opportunity to do that in a prolonged season through, you know, through the trading market, not just picking up somebody off of the street like they did with Daniel Vogelbach, but, you know, they definitely... They would have a chance to turn it around, and I don't know if that, it doesn't look like it was ever going to turn around, but man, you just never know. So I don't know. We're gonna have a lot to talk about in terms of how to evaluate. I'm sure the teams themselves will, but like going, you know, like I said, is Devin Williams a superstar now? Is Corbin Burnes a superstar now? Is Christian Yelich just not going to be the player he was? Like all these things you can't really say because it's such a short amount of time, but all these things the Brewers are gonna have to figure out before they know what to do next, I suppose.
And I don't envy him for that. You know what? Because I think the margin for error has grown exponentially, making evaluations off of 60 games.
You know?
And so they may go conservatively and give guys a second chance and then redoing it next year. But if they cut bait with guys and they go on and in over 162 with somebody else next year play great, they're going to hate themselves for it. You know, so good luck on that. I'm glad. That's why they, you know, the old saying, that's why they get paid the big bucks. I wonder if they're paid enough bucks to figure all this out.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one. But in the meantime, there is at least two more games of baseball, for better or worse. And we will obviously be talking about that next week, depending on how, well, either way, I suppose.
The key now is, can anybody stay up for it?
Yeah, we haven't had West Coast baseball all year long.
I mean, I'm covering it from my house, and I'm going to like keep an alarm clock nearby so I don't doze off. And not because maybe the games aren't any good, but just it's so daggone late for an old fart like me.
Yeah, it's going to be a little March Madness feeling starting on Tuesday with the American League games to have that many playoff games available to you. And kind of all hours of the day.
Wednesday's the crazy day. Wednesday's the guaranteed 8 games. I mean, we've never had any. It really is March Madness.
And yep.
At the end. I mean, 8 games. We know on Wednesday, when the AL's playing their second day and the NL's playing their first day, we're going to have 8 games. I looked at the schedule. There's like a game every hour.
Yeah, it is exactly like the second round of the NCAA tournament when you've got 16 teams alive on a given day and 8 of them are, yeah, it's just going to be a cascade of games. Obviously, those are much longer than college basketball games too. So that will be fun. It will be different as always, but it will be fun. We'll see if the Brewers wind up shocking everybody and getting into the next level. Any last thoughts, Tom, before I let you go?
No, I mean, it's just, we've been in a bizarro world, and so it just continues. You know, we've got a losing team. We're covering a losing team in the postseason now. I mean, it just, why not? Why not? You know, I've said why not to so many things this year, both, you know, personally and professionally. So why not this?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Why not? Thanks for joining us, everybody. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. We will be back with you again next week to maybe do a postmortem, maybe talk about the divisional series. Who knows? No idea. But we will join you again then. Thanks, Tom, for joining us. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, JR.